Okay, so this is my second presentation in this symposium, but I promise you that this is my last contribution. You won't have to listen to me again after this presentation. The outline of my talk is as follows. I will start by giving some background information. Then I will give some results of the laboratory experiments that we did. I give an outlook to the field experiment that we will do in the upcoming leaching season. And I will conclude with a summary. Okay, background information of the work that we are doing. Well, in the Netherlands, agriculture is responsible for more than 50% of the total annual P-load to surface waters. In 2015, it is already foreseen now that we will not be able to comply with the chemical quality of the Dutch surface waters. So that means that we have to take additional measures in order to reduce phosphorus loading of the surface waters in the Netherlands. Well, we've already heard a lot about the different options that there are available, but during all these options that are available, reactive materials are being used. And a lot of materials have been tested for phosphorus removal. Well, there's a whole list in this slide, but I won't go through this list. I only will say that in our work, we are using drinking water treatment residuals. Well, where are these drinking water treatment residuals coming from? Well, in the Netherlands, about 60% of the drinking water is produced from groundwater. And iron sludge and iron-coated sand are byproducts from the treatment of anaerobic groundwater. Well, anaerobic groundwater contains reduced iron, and this reduced iron needs to be removed from the water because it gives the water a bad taste and also a brownish color. Well, this can be done by oxygenating the water, but this leads to the precipitation, to the oxidation and precipitation of iron 2+, and then it forms amorphous iron hydroxide. So then you end up with two different products. One is iron sludge, and the other one is iron-coated sand. So these two products are being formed during the treatment of anaerobic groundwater. They are treated, they are produced at two different stages in the drinking water treatment process, but I won't go into these details. The objectives of this study were to determine the physical-chemical characteristics of the iron sludge and the iron-coated sand, and also to test their P-binding capacity in batch and column experiments. Okay, some laboratory experiments. Well, we measured the composition of both materials. The sludge contained quite some calcium in the form of calcium carbonate, and also the sand contained some calcium. Obviously, the sludge contained a lot of iron, 33% on a mass basis, but also the iron-coated sand contained quite some iron, 20% on a mass basis. But there was also some phosphorus present in both materials. But if you look at the availability of this phosphorus, we measured the availability of phosphorus in calcium chloride extracts. The R2P concentration is below the detection limit. So even though you have some substantial amounts of phosphorus in these materials, the availability is extremely low. And this is obviously due to the fact that the iron-phosphorus ratio is extremely high. Well, from these total concentrations of macroelements, you can calculate the composition of the iron sludge and the iron-coated sand. If you assume that all iron is present in both materials in the form of amorphous iron hydroxide, you can calculate that 63% of the sludge is in the form of amorphous iron hydroxide. This mass percentage is 38% for the sand. Well, both materials also contain some calcium carbonate. The sludge contains about 20% calcium carbonate and the sand about 2%. There is some organic matter left in both materials. And obviously, the sand contains a large sand fraction. So if you calculate then the sum of each constituent of the sludge and the sand, then we understand 97% of the total mass of the sludge, and we can understand 100% of the mass of the sand. Well, we also did some adsorption isotherms for the iron sludge. These are the isotherms. We determined the isotherms at three different time steps, 24 hours, 72 hours, and 192 hours. And these isotherms are of the high affinity type. Well, phosphorus binding increases with time, and this is due to penetration of phosphorus into the iron particles via diffusion, which is followed by either internal binding or internal precipitation. Well, the calculated sorption maximum for the iron sludge is 17.5 grams P per kilogram for the time step of 192 hours. We also did some chemical equilibrium calculations, and all solutions were undersaturated with respect to calcium phosphorus minerals. So we think that the phosphorus binding by this material is due to the fact that you have phosphorus binding by the iron oxide or by the surface of calcium carbonate. Well, we also compared phosphorus binding by the iron sludge with phosphorus binding by goethite. The pH in our solutions of the adsorption isotherm varied around 7.4. So if you compare this with adsorption isotherms for phosphorus by goethite at pH 7 and 8, then you see that phosphorus sorption on iron sludge exceeds the sorption on goethite. So apparently this iron sludge is able to capture quite a lot of phosphorus. We also had a look into the saturated hydraulic conductivity because we felt that this is a very important parameter of the materials if you want to apply them to soils. So what you see in this figure is the percentage of iron sludge on the x-axis and the K-sat on the y-axis. So we made different mixtures of iron sludge and coarse sand. So what you see is that the saturated conductivity decreases at a very rapid pace with an increase in the iron sludge content. We also determined the saturated conductivity of the iron coated sand. And what you see here is that, well, the saturated conductivity of the iron coated sand is much higher than for the iron sludge. Most problems with phosphorus that we have in the Netherlands are occurring on sandy soils. So if you would want to apply these materials to sandy soils, then obviously the saturated conductivity needs to be higher than that of sandy soils, because otherwise you might have the risk of system clogging. Well, for iron-coated sand, this will be no problem because the saturated conductivity is very high in comparison with the saturated conductivity of sandy soils. However, if you look to iron sludge, then you need to be careful, because if the percentage of iron sludge in your mixture with coarse sand is too high, then you will have a risk of system clogging. And in our column experiments, for instance, that I will show later on, we worked with an iron sludge percentage of 10% and less. So the column experiments, we had a column filled with only coarse sand, which was our control, a column filled with 1% iron sludge, a column filled with 5% iron sludge, one with 10% iron sludge, and one with 100% iron-coated sand. Well, the duration of the column experiment was about 240 days, and we used an input concentration of 4 milligrams R2P per liter. Well, why did we choose to use this input concentration? I will show later on that this concentration is a very normal concentration that you can encounter in the flower bulb growing area in the Netherlands. We used a background electrolyte of 2.5 millimoles calcium nitrate. And the flow rate was about 1.1 liter per day. And this leads to a residence time of 0.8 to 1.1 hours. In the filtered effluent samples, we measured pH, concentrations of orthophosphorus, total phosphorus, all different kinds of elements, heavy metals, and so on. And we also measured DUC. Okay, the results of the column experiments. What you see here is, this dashed line represents the input concentration. The red symbols represent the results for the column with 1% iron sludge. The green symbols represent the results for the column with 5% iron sludge, 10% iron sludge, and 100% iron-coated sand. So what you see is that the time of breakthrough clearly depends on the amount of iron that you have in the system, which of course was to be expected. Also, another result was that the total iron concentration was continuously below the detection limit. You can plot these results of the former slide also in a different manner. Again, here you see the R2P concentration in the effluent on the y-axis, but this time we put the phosphorus loading of the column in grams P per kilogram of iron on the x-axis. So what you see then is that you obtain a uniform curve for all five different columns. The interesting thing about this is that you can use such curves to calculate the amount of material that you need for your filter system, for your reactive barrier system, and so on. Because this dashed line here at the bottom is a threshold for total phosphorus in surface waters in the Netherlands. So this line intersects with this curve at this point. So if you want to control your phosphorus concentration at this level, then you should can calculate the amount of iron material that you need from that point of intersection. Of course, given the conditions of the experiment that we used during the column experiment. We also did another experiment with column 2, the column that was filled with 1% iron sludge. We stopped the phosphorus input after 166 days because that particular column already experienced breakthrough for a very long time. But after stopping the phosphorus input, we continued the percolation for another 72 days, but then without phosphorus. So what you see then is that the R2P concentration in the effluent decreases very rapidly to levels below 0.1 milligram P per liter. Well, also, you can plot these results in another way. You can plot these results as a CQ plot, which is, well, kind of a adsorption isotherm. So here you find the orthophosphorus concentration in the effluent on the y-axis and the phosphorus bound in the column in grams P per kilogram of iron on the x-axis. So this is then the isotherm. And these data points represent the data points from the moment onwards when phosphorus input was stopped. So what you see here is a hysteresis effect. The R2P concentration in the effluent decreased by 98%, while phosphorus bound by the solid phase decreased only by 31%. So apparently, the phosphorus that has been bound in the column is fixed very strongly. Okay, outlook to a field experiment. Well, the most important pathways for phosphorus transport in the Netherlands are interflow in the unsaturated zone, subsurface leaching and pipe drainage. In the Netherlands, about 50% of the agricultural land is drained by pipe drains. So the measure that we are going to study in the upcoming leaching season is focusing on pipe drainage, on reducing the amount of phosphorus that is lost via this transport route. The idea that we have is that we use an enveloped pipe drain. So we wrap a layer of iron-coated sand around this pipe drain. So the objective of this experiment is to test the effectiveness of this measure in the upcoming leaching season. So this is the flower bulb area in the Netherlands. Looks very beautiful, and most foreign tourists always go to this region. But it is very picturesque, but it is also located on calcareous sandy soils with a low capacity to bind phosphorus. And these soils have a low organic matter content. They are located in the west of the Netherlands above Amsterdam. They have high inputs of nutrients and of organic matter, and the thresholds for nitrogen and phosphorus in the surface water are frequently exceeded. And this area is also largely drained by pipe drains. And the orthophosphorus concentrations varies between 0.2 and 7 mg per liter. Well, this is the field site that we have, and on this particular site, the orthophosphorus concentration is 4 mg per liter in the discharge water of the pipe drain. So this is the iron-coated sand that we used during our experiment. And this is, our experiment itself. So what we did, we dug a trench with a length of 55 meter, a depth of 0.8 meter, and a width of 0.4 meter. And we wrapped the pipe drain in a layer of 10 centimeter iron-coated sand. So this is what it looks in detail. So we will place suction cups at different positions along the pipe drain. Well, two adjacent pipe drains will be used as a reference. And we will take samples as a function of time, and we will measure pH, redox, concentrations of phosphorus, macro elements, and DOC during the upcoming leaching season. So next year, hopefully, I will be able to tell you about the results of that study. Okay, last slide, the summary. So iron sludge can sorb a lot of P, but its applicability is limited due to a low saturated hydraulic conductivity. So that means that you have to mix it with sand in order to improve its conductivity, its water conductivity. However, this reduces its phosphorus sorption capacity. Well, the iron-coated sand was very effective in binding phosphorus, but it has also a high saturated conductivity. Influence of time on phosphorus sorption can be important, but the process of slow sorption may be less relevant if you have short residence time in your mitigation strategy. Well, we will test the iron-coated sand using an enveloped drain in the flower bulb growing area in the upcoming leaching season. And this is the end of my presentation, and I will be happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Kerwin. We have time for one question.
Maybe I missed this, but why are you wrapping the tile line with your beam sorbent material? Why don't you just bury it in a layer of that?
Well, in fact, what we do is that we make some sort of an envelope around this pipe drain. So, in fact, that is the same as what you were saying, I guess.
Okay, maybe I
missed it. Okay. Do you have reducing conditions there, and are you worried about the iron getting reduced and releasing the phosphorus?
We have no idea at this moment, but I think it will be kind of neat to follow this this process in the field, because everybody's talking about it, and as soon as you present it, you always get this question, of course. So I'm kind of curious whether we will see this effect in the field, but I can make a few comments about this. The pipe drain is not discharging all year round, meaning that the pipe drain will be filled with oxygen part of the year. And this oxygen will obviously be able to penetrate into this layer of iron oxide. Second, we have also quite some nitrate in this discharge water, and nitrate may also buffer the redox conditions at a higher level than is needed in order to reduce the iron 2+. Third, this is a system that is very low in organic matter, and of course, in order to depress the redox conditions, you need a donor. So maybe the low organic matter levels in our situation may be not high enough to get the redox at that point that you will have iron reduction. Also, we have an excess of iron. If you have an excess of iron, then the risk of phosphorus release after the iron has been reduced is fairly low. This also depends on this ratio. And the last remark that I would like to make, it has been shown that under reducing conditions, iron and phosphorus can form a mineral, vivianite. And this mineral is also able to control the phosphorus concentration at a very low level. But we are going to follow all important parameters that may say something about the processes that are going on. We are going to follow all these important parameters during the upcoming leaching season.
So there's no time during the year when they let the water level come up above, like to the soil surface or higher. It's always drained.
It's always drained, and especially because of the fact that this is a very coarse sandy soil, means that the water will wash out very quickly if you have heavy rainfall and so on. So the water level almost never comes to the soil surface.
All right, we need to move on.
Okay.
Thank you, Kerwin.